Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, on Workplace Action Jackson, I'm Tom Howell. Andrew on the board. We have S&P futures up a bunch. Like 100 points. We got NASDAQ futures up 277, actually 114. NASDAQ up 270. Dow's up like 1,100. Russell's up 4%. So everything is good. We were up yesterday, up the day before, but all's good. Whoever we put in office is going to pour more money in their system, and we're good to go. You only have a little fly in this ointment, but then again, you don't want to look at any flies in the ointment when everything is spectacular. Because we have the 10-year is up 18 basis points to almost 4.5. That's a problem for anybody who gets in office, but not today. We have no problems today. Do we have Kevin?
Well, yes, you do, so I guess you have at least one problem.
What's that?
Me?
Why are you a problem?
I don't know, I just am.
Well, it's okay, I mean, you know.
I just tend to be, Tom. I'm just a problematic guy.
Well, it's kind of the way the world is now, and that's why I think elections are different, people's thoughts are different, a lot of things are different, and I guess you just got to roll with it. What else can you do?
What else can you do? Hey, the first thing I want to say is Hal was on it yesterday regarding the polls. That when you have now, it turns out Illinois is only like a 4-point difference in the presidential election, which is jaw-dropping on its own. So I guess people's votes in Illinois did matter this time around. But when you have three states basically that constitute about 23% of the population, and if you're telling me that the population, the population as a whole is neck and neck, those three states are generally going to be in the 55-45 range in favor of the Democrat, which means that the rest of the states are going to have to be, I'd have to do the math to calculate the number, but they're going to have to be 60% or something like that. 60-40, maybe 65-35, some big number like that. They're going to have to be in favor of the other side, of the Republican. And that would include the swing states, which it looks like Trump is going to sweep. He's got a great chance to sweep it, let's put it that way. I don't think Michigan's been called yet. Nevada and Arizona haven't been called yet, but he's leading all of those. And so it was just not possible for all of these swing state polls to be neck and neck and the national poll to be neck and neck at the same time. And as it turns out, Trump is likely to win the popular vote. He's likely to win the popular vote. He's leading it.
Every person, well, Chicago, it was rain all day yesterday. So that's a problem, especially when you're told for years that your vote doesn't matter. It's going to go one way whether you show up or not. There was no reason in the city here to be there for an election other than the school board if you didn't think your vote counted at the top one.
I'm Karen Dew, by the way.
She lost by like 1,000 or 500 votes or something.
Okay.
So, on one hand, I don't like to see her lose. On the other hand, I don't know if I wanted her in that job.
But you don't know if you'd wish that job on anyone.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So what was the turnout in Illinois? I'd be curious to know.
I know in the city, everywhere you looked, it's hard to tell because they've cut back on the polling places. So everywhere you looked, there was kind of a line. But by my place, when I walked down, I was the only person there. But evidently, they had a line in the morning. And we're planning on being busier than that. But literally, I mean, Kevin, the ballot is a joke. You got the presidential spot. I talked to our buddy Flanagan yesterday. Neither one of us could figure out why the state's attorney, Karen Fox, is gone. That race was yesterday, even though like none of the other county stuff was, none of the city stuff, none of the state stuff. So that race was yesterday. It's the only, and then there was a school board. Then there was Mike Quigley running over some guy. So that, you know, the rep. There was no Senate race here. And then you had 3.5 pages of judges. You know, you had your usual crap, the Water Reclamation District. You don't know who the hell those people are. That kind of stuff. And this judge thing. I mean, I get it when you say, you know, okay, we really just don't want, you know, Eddie Burke, because he used to be powerful in this area. I don't think they were appointed when he was there, but say you don't want Eddie Burke appointing, you know, 200 judges or something, or 3, however many judges there are. There's a lot. There's quite a few judges. I mean, there's all kinds of places around here, courtrooms. Well, we better elect him. We don't want somebody with that kind of power. Okay. So now we have a spot where you go through. He must go through some kind of vetting process, probably with the Democrats. And you got to get, I imagine you have to get signatures or something we have to do. So there'll be, there's the vacancy of Kevin O'Neill, who's retiring. And there's one name there, Al Snar. This is like 40 spots. There's only one name there, and you can't write anybody in. I mean, I have no idea what good that does anybody. You might as well appoint the damn guy. What's the difference? He's the only one on the ballot, right? And then you have the retention ballot, which is another 50 people. You vote yes or no. So I do my usual act of defiance and vote no on everybody. That's what you were there for. So, I mean, what's the point? I mean, you don't think the state's attorney race really wasn't close. The presidential race, they keep telling you what's the point, Democrat or Republican, it's already called. So it left the school board. It's kind of the only reason why I walked down the block. That's that much of an election. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, it turns out it wasn't. It wasn't such an easy call on the presidential.
Well, I mean, Democrats made some pretty serious errors in one man's opinion that I sort of said all along, and I mean, I don't know if they realized that they did, but they did. I think if you were gonna figure out that Biden was not going to run again, you needed to do it earlier and had a regular primary process. Or Mike Quigley, when it looked like it was about to happen, and Mike's a pretty smart guy, he's a representative from our area, said, you know, if we're going to do it, we better do it and have some kind of a national primary before the convention that we can actually, if people have some talent, want to put their name in the ring, they should. It shouldn't just be an inauguration of somebody. And he was right. I mean, in this world, despite what people say and think and what dribble comes out of their pie hole, the idea of an African-American woman with that much of a background anointed to the spot didn't sit well with anybody. Most people are not happy about voting for a woman. Obviously, the women are. And most people are not all that happy voting for an African-American when you have the likes of Brandon Johnson and people like that somehow in power and are totally incompetent. To think that doesn't...
I think you're misreading that totally. I think Kamala Harris was just a terrible candidate on her own merits.
Well,
it didn't matter that she was a woman. It didn't matter. I mean, look, her vice presidential candidate selection was not an African-American woman. And
okay.
He was a drag on the ticket.
Yeah.
And just a terrible choice.
I don't. What I just said, Kevin. I don't want it to be true, but it is. You think somebody in a rural area is going to vote for a black lady that doesn't even? If it was a person who had been
wait, but don't do that. Don't insinuate just because you live in a rural area doesn't make you a racist. There's just as many.
Kevin,
of those
I don't.
In the
I don't.
City.
I get that. All right.
Pick on rural areas.
I get
like
that. I get
don't
that.
Generalize rural areas like that.
Okay. A lot of white people are not going to vote for a black lady. They don't think is special, and she's not special. How else can I say it?
Well, I'm going to say that they won't vote for somebody they don't think is special, but and she's not. It's not that she isn't special. She was a terrible candidate. You know, it, one of the things that I've been hearing, because I've been listening to the left-wing media all morning, and one of the things they're saying is that America just never got a chance to know Kamala Harris. They didn't have time to know her. And all I'm sitting here thinking, geez, she didn't do a single press conference, and she didn't do any kind of sit-down, long-form interview until the end when she was just getting hammered for not doing them. And then when she did them, they were disastrous.
Everybody picks out the piece in the other person they don't necessarily like. The fact is, she got there, they should have decided that Biden wasn't going to run earlier enough. And had actually had an open primary process that maybe he actually had to compete in the primaries. And if he did, he wouldn't have done so well.
But yeah, well, the common punditry on that is he should have announced he wasn't running after the midterms.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing over and over.
All right, but I'm saying...
But what was the problem with Biden? Why did he have to announce he wasn't running? Because they were covering up the reason. Well, they weren't even covering up the reason. They would have been perfectly happy to... The Democrats would have been perfectly happy to take him all the way through this and continue to stash him away and let the surrogates do the talking, except that he was getting his brains beat in the polls. So they said, well, he's going to lose. It wasn't his diminished capacity that got him thrown off the ticket. It was that he was going to lose is what got him thrown off the ticket.
If there would have been a primary process, he would not have won. If he would actually had to go through Iowa and these other kinds of places, he would never have been able to do it.
He wouldn't have been able to win, and Harris wouldn't have been able to win either.
That's exactly my point. I mean, they should have opened it up and had another, and had there probably maybe somebody would have come to the front if they were able to, but people can't come to the front if they're able to, because somehow or another somebody is in charge of this mess that seems to tell people when they can move forward and when they can't. And I, you know, and until we find out who that person is and get them the hell out of there, I think we got a problem.
Well, there's also a fair amount of blame Biden that is saying that he should have dropped the day after the debate, which I don't think was going to happen. You know, there's a certain amount of pride that the man has. But he should have dropped virtually immediately after the debate. And by dragging that drama on for several weeks, he precluded any ability to have even a quickie primary.
Well, that's what Mike Quigley, with his whole point. Let's have a national primary. At least then, if she wins that ahead of other people, then she's done something. I'm not saying it would have been a difference maker, but I mean, there's all kinds of messes to this whole thing here. In my opinion, you can take the high road in a campaign, you can take the low road, and the low road, what did Freud used to call it, the ego versus the id? You can take the low road, and it's very effective. And Trump proved that. It's very effective. And, you know, it's always been there. It's just human nature. And, you know, I just hope he does a pretty good job. The only problem is, Kevin, I'm getting to the age where I can't sit out 15 years of guys screwing up again and hope that everything's going to be okay. I mean, it's not like we're 20 anymore. You know,
well,
it's,
he better hope that the inflation that's coming hits like now.
It's not going to hit in a month.
Otherwise, he's going to take the blame for it.
Well, first, he should take the blame for it. It was a combined...
He shouldn't take all of it, but the most recent flood of money supply is not his fault. You know, that is strictly, the Yellen group. And that isn't far from hitting.
Well, what makes you think he's not going to do the same thing? The bonds are up, the interest rates are up today.
It's been done. When you say what makes me think he's not going to do the same thing, I don't know if he's going to do the same
thing.
Well,
he's the one who's...
I know what has already been done.
He's the one who started...
dropped an inflation bomb into the economy, and this is just what happened most recently.
Okay, but under...
And that's an inflation bomb that got dropped into the economy. And now it's going to crop up. I don't know if it's going to show up in June or if it's going to show up in January.
The inflation bomb, they've increased the money supply last 3 months on a rate of about 5.5% a year.
Yep.
When Trump and Biden, his last year and a half and Biden's first year, In 18 months, they raised it 40%. We're not even on the same planet.
Tom, I understand. I get that. But that's already baked into the current situation. If you're looking at the average person who is going to react to what happens in real time, we already know what the current situation is. And we've all decided who's to blame for that.
Well,
I won't say we've all decided who's to blame for that, whether we're right or wrong, because there's a lot of people who don't recognize Trump's role in that. And that's fine. What I'm saying is, though, there's a surge that's inevitable. Like, it's inevitable if nothing else changes from today. If everybody, the rest of the way, the Biden administration and then leading into the Trump administration, if everybody just holds the line to the status quo instead of goosing the money supply, we are going to see some inflation about that. And so my comment about Trump is he better hope that it hits now. It's not something that shows up in June or July, because he's going to take the heat for it in June or July.
Well, do you think the market reaction today is a reaction that you're going to get if your guy coming in is going to do tight money policy?
No, and I don't expect tight money policy. I will be to my eternal disappointment in anybody who's in the office, because we need to get it in order. But our biggest problem is spending, and we need to get spending in order too.
But we're talking about somebody. We're talking about somebody who. And the Republicans, they have the reputation. I don't necessarily think that they do it. If you look at the numbers never match the reputation. The Republicans are pro-business and pro-market. Okay, none of the numbers bear that out, but that's what everybody thinks. Now, if you're pro-market, he's not going to pop this bubble.
I don't think that's what everybody thinks anymore. They've become the party of the
S&P futures. S&P futures up 125. NASDAQ futures up 317. What do you mean? He's not going to come in and pop the bubble. Right now, the money's telling you he's not going to. Tesla's up $30. Is he going to cut back?
His voters are not not big business. His voters are working class, and a huge spike up in Hispanics, and an increase among young people, disillusioned young people, an increase among labor. When union leaders have endorsed his opponent, the rank and file is lining up behind him. So it doesn't sound like they're lining up to me anymore.
They're lining up against something they think is the status quo, and they look at him as his intellectual change agent, and he just isn't. I hope I'm wrong, but S&P futures up 125.
Party of the wealthy. Who's the party of the wealthy?
S&P futures up 125. Should I repeat myself? NASDAQ futures up 312. They think the market did nothing while he was in office. All he did was say how good a job he was doing because the market was up. Or you not remember that?
No, I do remember that.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I do remember that.
And now his new
that's
best.
That's not his constituency. Definitely not anymore.
Well, if you start lowering corporate tax rates, that's your constituency. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do because he said so much, and nobody's going to do what they said during the campaign. I get that. Hopefully, we'll get some kind of an idea of what he's actually going to do, and it'll be okay. I mean, it's what else can I hope for, right? I mean, I hope he's smart enough to not realize he can cut the income tax in half and make it up through tariffs, when one's like a couple of $1 trillion a year, and the other's $70 billion. I mean, you got to be a pretty ignorant dude to believe that. We had a lot of people who believed it. Anyway, be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 127. NASDAQ Futures up 320. And I don't normally give this, but I will today because for most of my clients in the Protected Index Program, our two favorite indices have been the Qs and have been the Russell. And the Russell's lagged a little bit, but not today. It's up $13, almost 6%. So I'm going to say my clients are going to have one hell of a nice day today. And we're going to try and lock some of that in as soon as we can. The VIX is way down. It's trading almost 16 from 20 after the election. So there were some spreads yesterday to do one-dayers, but you really would have had to pick high to get the right strike. If you did, you're doing good, but I don't know if I had to pick quite this high, but we are high. We're at an all-time high, I think. Where's the machine is doing? We need her. Over in Europe, DAX up 78.4%, FTSE up 82, that's a full 1%. CAC around up 60.8%. Yesterday we were up. Yesterday as well, the Dow was up 427, S&P up 70, Nasdaq up 259. So Nasdaq was almost up as much yesterday as it is today. Bonds, and here's the kind of the wrinkle: 10-year up 18 basis points, 4.47. I don't know if it keeps going or not, but we'll see. If it gets near 5, it's going to make a difference to the market, I think, no matter what. Bund unchanged, 2.42. Japan up 5 basis points, 0.99. It's a big move for those guys. Oil down $1.11, 70.88, still right in the middle of this range. Brent down $1.13, 74.40. Natural gas up 3 cents, 270. RBOB down 3 cents, 2 bucks even. We have gold, because the interest rates are so far up. Gold's down 36, it was down 45. Silver down 81, 31.96. Copper down 16 cents, 4.30. We have foreign exchange. The dollar is actually quite a bit stronger today. The euro's down to 107. It's a big move. That's a 2.5% move in the dollar today. It's huge. British pound down 2 basis points. It's hanging in there a little better than the euro, but not much. 128. Japan up almost 3 basis points. 154.37. That's almost a 2% move in the yen as well. So those are big currency moves today. Crypto up $4,900. It's a record 75,000. As everybody's promising weaker regulation. I'm not so sure they have any regulation, but again, over in Asia, which we haven't done that one yet, Nikkei up 1,000, 2.6%. Hang Seng down 470, 2.2%. That's a little odd. Shanghai down 3, let's call that flat. How somebody's flat on this day without one way or the other? Anyway, Shanghai is flat. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
All right, it is Wednesday, November 6th, and it is 6:34 here in Chicago. As far as I can tell, there are no sports to report, as they've all been taking a little bit of a break for the important stuff yesterday. But the weather doesn't stop. Right now in Chicago, it is 52 degrees. Going to be a bit of a cooler day with a little bit of sun, a little bit of clouds. Looks like we're going to have a high of 54. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 49 degrees. They're going to have the same deal, a little bit cooler, mostly some sun, mostly some clouds. And they're going to have a high of 69 degrees. Now finally, for Chicago traffic, the Mount Expressways, things are in the middle. Looks like there was an accident at the Kennedy, but it looks like that just cleared up, not seeing it anymore, so no major accidents to report at the moment. If you're on the inbound, nearly all major expressways are experiencing some delays. If you're on the outbound, look about Central Avenue on the Stevenson. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
The whole NBA took the day off yesterday. The courts were closed. As everybody went and voted for judges, it's kind of interesting. One of my judge buddies, Kevin, I don't know if you heard yesterday, I didn't know his last name. I said, what's your last name, so I don't vote no for you. He goes, oh, don't worry, I'm retiring. I'm not on the list. So I go, okay. So I got to vote no for everybody.
Good job.
Yeah, but I still don't understand that. I mean, I guess as a moral hazard, I'd rather not have one person picking all the judges. But as you work out the details of it, it really almost turns out to be the same thing, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, unless more people do like you do. And well, if you tell them all no, and everybody tells them all no, then what happens?
Well, they don't. Everybody votes yes, so that's why.
I understand that, but even if everybody voted no on the retention ballot, what would you do then?
Well, if everybody voted no for everybody, I think you'd have a problem, but you'd have to toss them.
It'd be kind of fun, actually.
But the other one, but that's not the
We're
one.
We're not prosecuting people anyway. What the hell? We don't need courts.
Well, the other ones are even weirder, though. I mean, I don't even know what the motivation is. It's a, you know, for the Andrew Zycora vacancy, Kevin O'Neill. Okay. There's no write-in, there's no nothing. I mean, there's Kevin O'Neill. I can either vote for you or not. But, I mean, no matter what, you're going to win. And then when you...
I'm going to win because I only need one vote to win. I'm unopposed, and I'll vote for myself.
Yeah, if you
call that a sweep with 100% of the vote.
No, but if you retire or croak, then it's for the Kevin O'Neill vacancy, Tom Howe. But so it doesn't become your slot until you're gone. it's crazy.
Hey, let's hit one more poll thing. Remember over the weekend we had that Iowa poll that came out? Said that Harris was up 3.
It's all depending on who you ask.
Pardon?
It all depends on who you ask.
It depends on who you ask, and everybody, you know, everybody's going on. Ann Seltzer, it's her poll. She's the one. She's a respected pollster, and she's, you know, she gets things right. This is a harbinger. You know, Harris is up 3. Trump won 56-42.
I'm actually kind of surprised.
Good job.
I was on. On record, I don't know if I was necessarily on record on the show, but I actually thought that the demographics were pretty seriously against Trump, and somehow he managed to deal with that. I mean, I thought the amount of young people that weren't around 8 years ago, able to vote, versus a lot of the old people that might not even be here, considering COVID and everything else. I thought the demographics... were pretty much against him, and somehow the Democrats managed to screw that up somehow.
It is partly the Democrats screwing it up, but you know, the other part of it, and I know I tried to encourage you to listen to some of these podcasts. I don't know if you ever did.
Yeah, but the reason for why I didn't is I try and make, when people come on here, it could be Trump, it could be, you know, Attila the Hun, I try and get to the points where I can learn something from them and not make them out to be a moron, okay? Just because somebody goes on somebody's show and the guy leads them down a good road and he sounds halfway decent, doesn't make them anything, I mean, right?
Well, okay, but that's not what happened.
All right.
When you sit down with Joe Rogan for 3 hours, he's going to ask you a lot of pointed questions. He's going to ask you follow-ups. Some of it is just going to be chit chat about, you know, God knows what. I mean, it could be about, you know, about family, about raising kids. It could be about what's going on in the country that is not a hot button issue. It, you know, there's a lot of it. But when you sit down with somebody for 3 hours who is a good interviewer and who asks questions and follow up questions and pushes you on some of the issues, you do learn something, and this is something else that Harris didn't do. Now, when you speak to this about young people, one of the things that Trump did was he did a whole lot of these long form interviews, and he went on podcasts that young people listen to, and so he comes off as it's just guys talking. It comes off is that kind of a conversation, because the people who run these very popular podcasts are good at it.
But you're like
we're really good at it here. Let me finish. And so then they see all these ads and all these people saying he's a monster, he's a fascist, he's all that, and then they listen to a 2-hour podcast with Andrew, I forget his last name, with that guy, or they listen to the Rogan podcast, and they say, he doesn't sound like a monster to me.
Kevin, you're an amazingly intelligent, well-read guy, and you like to think that people take the high road. And you like to think that people that voted for him listened to Joe Rogan and actually found out there might be a brain cell working in there. I mean, I know that, and I tell you what, I sincerely hope you're right. I must have heard 50 people interviewed yesterday in line, every one of them. He's going to get rid of those immigrants that are causing all the trouble. He's going to do that. Not one of them said, I listen to Joe Rogan and Trump's actually a smart guy. Every one of them took some sort of stupid thing he said during the campaign, and that's why they were there.
Now, how many of them were in the first-time voter age group?
Well, they didn't identify. Some of them sound pretty young.
Right. So the reason I ask is because that was defining when it came to young people. They listen to a lot of these podcasts. That's kind of baked into what they do. These podcasts aren't all political. They're culture, they're music, they get all kinds of people on there. So this becomes a daily listen for a lot of people. And Trump was lucky to have an advisor who was in that age group and could tell him what is popular and what's not. And that was his son.
I had a long conversation with somebody this weekend regarding the election and how virtually every drug that's ever been in this country has been brought by these people. Every murder is being committed by them. Kevin, people are picking this stuff up. They're believing it. It's crazy. But that the low road works, unfortunately, especially when people are stressed, which they are. And in being stressed is a combination of a lot of bad government for a lot of years. And people are exceptionally stressed, and they're willing to try anything different.
It's just like the other side marching out the fascist thing. It's like people going on news shows and saying this Madison Square Garden thing, Trump is intentionally acting out the 1939 Madison Square Garden rally in favor of the Nazis. He knows what he's doing, and he's trying to conjure up those same images. And this is the kind of stuff that is going on, and you don't like it on one side and never seem to mention it on the other side, or seldom seem to mention it on the other side, but it's just as dark. And the problem is, if you're going to claim to be on the side of virtue, which is what the Democrats tried to do, that Trump was evil and that they were going to be the side of virtue, then you can't be a liar. You can't go on and say he wanted to put Liz Cheney in front of a firing squad, because because the full context video is there. You can't say he called for a bloodbath if he loses, because the full context is there, and it's very obvious that he's talking about a bloodbath in the auto industry if certain things are allowed to happen. So if you can't be an Irwin Mainway caliber liar and claim to be on the side of virtue. Well, it doesn't work. And one of the reasons it didn't work is because there were people, and it doesn't matter if it was young people listening to a podcast, or if it was older people listening to an hour-long interview with Maria Bartiromo. It doesn't matter. What you see in that form of interview is totally different from the sound bites that you get out of his rallies. And even, if you're focused in on the sound bites, yeah, dumb people will cite that as their reason for voting. But that's not everybody.
And I didn't say it was.
You start saying, how did he make so many inroads with young people? That's how he did it. Because they have a different way of going about things. They aren't listening to CNN or Fox or MSNBC. They're not listening to any of those. They're not listening to the soundbite reporting. They're sitting. They have a whole different perspective. And I think this is a sea change in campaigns will run now on.
It better not be. I'll tell you why. Because one thing I've been doing this for a long time, and John and I run a score before this. One thing I've learned, it's not what you say, it's what people hear. And the last thing I want, and it appears the thing he wants, is to lob something out there that sounds awful, but you couch it in such a way that you can have four or five little gnomes running after you saying he didn't really say that. If you played the whole tape, that's not what he said. But people heard the other thing. He knows what people are hearing.
He knows what people are hearing if you think, like, that bloodbath thing as an example. he knows what was not intended, and he's constantly correcting it and saying that they're right. lying about what he heard.
I'm talking. I just drove by.
That's not even the point. The point is that the world is open. You can't just you can show that clip on MSNBC and of him using the word bloodbath. It's going to be a bloodbath if I lose, but then everybody in the world gets to see the full clip.
Kevin, I'm not talking about a clip. I'm talking about I just drove by a migrant settlement today. Okay, now there's less and less people. They're probably going to close it because most of them got jobs. But I just drove by there today. Now, the man has said, and people have quoted, that he's going to send all these people back. Now, on January 22nd, am I going to drive by there and see four vans out there and people with guns shoving them in the vans and sending them back someplace? I mean, what is the definition of I'm sending them all back? Fill in the details on this.
Well, if you had taken the time to sit down and listen to a long-form interview, you would know that.
Okay.
Because the answer to that is we are going to start with people who have criminal convictions, and we are not going to keep them in the country.
Okay, that's fine. Maybe that's what he meant, and that's probably what he's going to do. Okay? But it's not what he said, and it's not what people heard.
Well, yeah, the platform says they're going to have a mass deportation.
Yeah.
So, I get that, Tom, but you can't say you didn't have the opportunity to find out what that means.
I'm just, you can go take the high road or you can take the low road, and a lot of the part of the campaign, he took the low road. Kevin, this is a fact. I mean, he did. There's a lot of people, there's still people believe that these people were eating dogs and cats, right? I'm sure there are. Even though he said, I just read that somewhere. I mean, it worked, okay? A lot of stuff works in elections.
Well, and the whole problem with Springfield is that's not, even if people are eating stray dogs and cats, that isn't even the issue.
I'm not,
the issue there is about employment and non-government organizations.
I think it's more,
talk about that.
My concern is more how much have we dumbed down the population? When he says, I'm going to not tax tips, does anybody really think that one group of people is going to not have to pay on their income? Or Kamala Harris, I'm going to give everybody $25,000 for a mortgage. Where exactly are you getting that money, Kamala? We're dumbing this down to the point that I'm more worried about the population than I am the candidates. Is that a fair statement? Why does anybody believe this crap?
Well, I think you got a lot of pushback on people not believing this crap.
But all it takes, if you got 100 people,
because remember what I told you, one of the big places where it broke down is this idea that he was a fascist who was going to be a dictator and all of that.
How do you know he's not going to be?
And that broke down because that was the common theme that was in Harris ads after Harris ad, and that broke down because a lot of people got to hear somebody different in a long form interview. And
I think I am telling you
that campaigns are going to start moving away from soundbite campaigning, and they're going to have to start having some substance. And that is probably the biggest place where Kamala Harris broke down. It wasn't that we didn't have time to get to know her; it's that she didn't take advantage of the opportunities for people to get to know her.
We're also in a situation where people don't look at any numbers, okay? When I say people don't, most people don't. Most people are convinced it's the same thing. It was the Jimmy Carter inflation. If you interviewed 100 people, 90 of them will say it was the Jimmy Carter inflation. Nothing could be further from the truth. And that right now, if you were to say to anybody on the street, even Democrats, is this inflation Biden or Trump, they're going to say Biden. Misinformation lasts forever. And one of the right wingers was telling me,
well, yes, but don't say it as if there is no Biden contribution to it.
I didn't say that. Because
you know what I've said since the day he got elected, that there will be inflation, but the economy's recovering. All he has to do is do nothing
and
take credit for it.
The last 8 years with this combined,
and by the way, Tom, he would have gotten credit for a strong recovery if he had left things alone, and then everybody would have said, well, whose recovery was it, Trump's or Biden's? And everybody would have said Biden's. That's the way it goes.
By every number out there, the recovery's been pretty strong.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, okay.
I don't know about that. How much real growth? Have we had manufacturing growth? Have we, all the indicators are not that.
The last 8 years, I take is, despite we've had two different presidents, was the most incompetent 8 years of presidency I've ever come across on a part of two people. And the idea that we had two people running, pointing fingers at the other one of which one was worse, I almost hope I'm waking up and it's a movie, honestly. It was incompetent from day one. And, certainly from the COVID situation, but
which, by the way, I hold Trump responsible for that.
Well,
the common criticism that he failed to react, but that he overreacted to it and started the ball rolling towards all these lockdowns that weren't necessary.
Well, I think I'm not so sure that when that thing first started, most people would have done the same thing. But I think most people would have come out of it a lot quicker. There was a lot of misinformation around. There was a lot of people, and the drug companies were right up everybody's butt in Washington. And I don't think he or anybody would have said, "I can't believe these guys," because they were supposed to be the experts, but they screwed everybody up. And
I know about when to start getting people back. He had severe disagreements with Fauci over that. But by then, it had been turned over to states, and so it was really up to the states as to when they were going to let.
Well, I might,
things come.
My huge bitch with politics, and I still remember. I didn't tape it or anything, but Pritzker, for whatever stupid reason, the guy was having a news conference on a Sunday. They were having them like every day, right? And the governor, I think, of Michigan or someplace, had just done something what I thought was like really stupid, shut down something, and so. They had like four or eight. Well, I could tell they were female because I could tell the voices, but I didn't know who the hell they were. They were peppering him with stuff with the it was almost abusive. You're not going to do this? Well, we're going to wait and see whether or not it's effective or something. Oh, so the governor of Michigan cares about saving lives and you don't. I mean, this was the abuse the dude was taking. I mean, anybody to make it sound like you were fighting for lives. You had to be more dumb than the person next to you. That's not the first time human beings have gone through that. I mean, it really was a pressure. The thing that my biggest...
And yet there were some governors who opened their states or never closed them, like in like Kristi Noem, who took a lot of abuse for it and said, too bad, this is the way we're doing it.
It's a hell of a lot easier to open a state in South Dakota than it is in New York City.
Yeah, how about Florida?
Well...
And that's why we're a republic, and each state should be able to manage themselves.
Well, and
that's a point. Because there's such a huge difference between. Sorry, Carl. I'm here.
Glad you're here,
Carl. Oh God, no, there's an insult for Kevin.
That was an insult.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I'm early. I've been up all night. Sorry. I was reading Carl's email.
Oh yeah,
so that's where it came from. I think
you insulted Carl though. So
good.
Well, but some things.
But just real quick. That's why, that's why you can also vote with your feet in America, which I think is kind of neat. I mean, I'm leaving Illinois for Indiana because Illinois is a dumpster fire. You know.
Well, I don't. I think at the end,
I agree more, and it just kind of it started to occur to me that I agree more with people in Indiana than Illinois. So why do I need a house up here anymore?
I hope you don't agree with the people south of the tollway.
Oh, I actually do. Then.
Oh God, well that's
I know.
Why would you say such a thing, Tom?
Just saying. I mean, just asking. There's two Indianas, right?
Yeah.
I deal with people all over the state.
There's supposed to be two
from every
Illinois.
Part of the state.
I'm just saying there's a difference in point of view between Chicago and downstate. It's not an insult to anybody.
Well, then why did you say I hope you don't agree with people south of the toll road?
Well, there's some of the parts way down.
You're downmouthing our listeners right now.
Some parts of, let's put it, I had a couple episodes down there in my youth, so.
Okay.
Different mindset. Most people don't know that. Very southern.
In your youth? How youth? Are we talking 50 years ago?
No. Actually, fairly recent. But, I mean, southern Indiana, isn't that where the John Birch Society started?
No, it was a Klan stronghold for a long time.
Well, sort of the same
thing. Well, it's a little different now.
I think so, yeah. Okay. But I'm saying I hope we don't go, when you talk about states, and you get different views of this. Okay, my one time I was at the SIBO, okay? And somehow or another they had me going to a World Series game, okay, which was nice. Well, I had to talk to people I didn't really want to talk to, but that part's okay. Well, next day I had to fly from Newark to San Francisco. And you fly, it takes you 6 hours, and you cover, basically you can see half the country. And you sit there and go, do we really want a whole set of laws for the people on the right side of the plane, for the left side of the plane? I don't know. I mean, it's, and some stuff, I would like to see something like abortion be 12 weeks or something, and we don't fight about it every single time there's a state election. Some stuff, I think, I never liked it when marijuana was a misdemeanor in California, and what was it, like 20 years in jail in Texas, Kevin? I mean, come on. I mean, we are sort of one place in a lot of regard, aren't we?
No.
Okay.
No. Culturally, we're radically different.
I'm going to play the experience card on you. I grew up in Tennessee. I lived in Georgia for in Atlanta for 5 years, which is a little bit different. It's a pearl in a bowl of grits, as they like to say, but it's still a different place. And then, I've lived up here, and now I kind of in the Chicago area, and now I'm kind of in the middle of Indiana off and on. So people are just very different.
I get that part. I'm not saying we should be all one state, and they want
different laws in certain cases, which is fine.
Okay.
If the majority of people in Mississippi want to live their lives one way, why should people in New York be upset about it?
I don't think they should be. Okay, but there are people from New York who might actually go down there, and all of a sudden they don't believe the stuff that people in Mississippi do. I mean, we're a little
they
bit
need
more...
to watch. They need to watch My Cousin Vinny and then rethink their life choice to put going right, down right. there.
Okay, I'm just...
Tom, think of the United States in comparison to Europe. So Europe, you have all these countries, and each country has its own sets of laws and its own ways of doing things, its tax structures, its business everything about it is, one from the next, and they have different cultures. The thing is, in Europe, most of those countries are about as big as a state in the United States.
Okay.
And yet we have no problem with that kind of geography, having different cultures, different laws, etc. I mean, we're no different in the U.S. It's just a different political arrangement.
This was a great argument back in like 1780, where it took you 6 weeks to get from Carolina to New Hampshire.
Yeah. No, I think it's still something. I wish I could repeat what she said to me, but we would lose our FCC license. I was trying to explain to my hyper liberal sister that she doesn't need to panic. We've got a great checks and balance system in America.
Where?
And we do. Okay. We just elect Donald Trump the most powerful man in the world. No. And he's not as powerful as Xi over in China. He's not as powerful as Putin. There's no way on God's green earth that a president of the United States would ever be able to throw 500,000 people and have them, into a meat grinder to try and take over part of Mexico. Putin is more powerful than the U.S. president. You've got a guy in North Korea that comes away unscathed, and he can blow up his uncle with an anti-aircraft gun in an arena in front of a bunch of people. Because of our system, as long as we maintain a pretty cool checks and balance system, I believe, regardless of whether your guy wins or your guy doesn't win, that there's no reason to panic.
I didn't say
I'm
panicking.
I like the messier part of our system that, allows different parts of the country to govern themselves slightly differently. Based on their values.
I have no problem with states being states. I never once said I wanted one place. I never once said I wanted to be France for every day in second grade. Everybody's looking at the same page of the same book. I want no part of that. But there's basic stuff, like on the abortion issue. For instance, it's essentially a fight between when the mother has rights versus when the unborn baby gets big enough or healthy enough to where they get some rights too. I think that should be a national consensus. That way we stop fighting about it 50 different places. It doesn't seem to me to be, and I'm not arguing one way or the other. I'm just saying whatever it is, I think it should be off the table statewide. You're not going to put a doctor in jail in New Hampshire, and because he's 50 feet over the line, he gets to do whatever he wants in Vermont. I mean, that's kind of weird on something this basic. Now, whether somebody wants to tax himself different, have the school boards different, all that other kind of stuff, I'm with you. I'm all for states' rights. I'm saying there's a few things that maybe ought to be sort of nationally determined. Just saying. I mean, I can't name
them. What are those things?
Well, I think abortion is one of them.
It is.
I'm not coming up with a solution. It's not my job.
They've got federal rules, but states do have rights to make their own rules as well.
I'm saying.
So I mean, do we selectively start taking away states' rights with respect to laws?
I don't think we should have states.
So what else?
I actually think we have been doing that.
I don't think pollution should be part of it. Whatever. I don't like some of our pollution laws. But I don't think some governor should be able to say, come over here and pollute and leave what state you're in and come over here and pollute. It's okay. I don't think that would be right.
And I believe that we do have federal pollution laws.
I know. I'm saying. Yeah. Oh, you guys.
You can't do anything worse than the
okay,
federal
Okay, but
laws.
Now I just took your argument and said, why should we? Why shouldn't that be a state thing?
Is it possible that pollution is not localized?
Got a federal minimum. For pollution laws, and then like California has their own freaking blend of gasoline. We have our own freaking blend of gasoline.
Okay.
You know that's an example of it right there. It's more stringent.
I'm trying my best to agree with you guys that I don't want the states. First of all, you would never divide the states the way you divide them now. Having Chicago and the rest of Illinois is kind of weird. And if we were going to set up a state, we probably would have Milwaukee, Chicago, maybe as far as Detroit, and you would have the rural areas of Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa would be one state, right? Trying to combine...
You know what would happen if you did that with the Electoral College?
I just said if you were to do it today, you probably wouldn't design the states the way they are now, is all I said.
But if you put all the big Midwestern cities together into a single state... they're practically going to have the ability to pick the president.
I'm just saying, we're talking about people that have the same sort of wants and needs and so forth. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't part of Connecticut and part of New Jersey be in the same state as New York City? When it's the same city, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. Once you take all the rural areas and make them their own state, what kind of an economy are they going to have? If they don't have any urban financial centers or anything like that at their disposal, I'm starting to ask questions. You better start answering those questions. We'd make Indianapolis a big banking center all of a sudden.
Okay,
I'd like that.
What I'm saying is the way things are set up right now, a lot of people's voice are not heard. I think people from Southern Illinois. Voice in the it was a little closer this time, as Kevin mentioned. People in Southern Illinois don't get a voice really heard in the presidential election. I don't like that, even though I may not vote the way those people vote. I don't think that's right. I would like to see when you combine the Electoral College with the way the states are set up. I don't think New York City should dominate the entire rest of the state. I don't think so. I'm just saying. I'm saying I don't have the solution on the wall, but I'm saying if we were to do this all over again, we probably would do it a little differently. That's just change. It's just the way the world works, right?
Well, I get that. It definitely did evolve on a case by case basis as states were added to the union. So I do get that. But again, I don't know what the solution would be. And I can't think of a good one off the top of my head to even start us down that road. So I suppose we could think about it, make it a project, and see what would you do if you really do it. So that'd be something for me to do in my spare time. But
it's all just
my teaching and administrative load doesn't allow for it.
But there's a sense going into this election and really the last few that an awful lot of people feel disenfranchised. And economically, it's been a 25-year disenfranchisement, I think, is, you know, my opinion on that. And for that to right itself, I don't know how the hell you do it, considering where the power is. And I don't see this guy changing any of the fact that people who are in power, it's the money's in power. It's not in the election. It's in the money.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I think, is somewhat of a problem. When people are underrepresented, when I say underrepresented, they're underrepresented in the real power and who's making these decisions. I mean, somebody gave Tesla $9 billion. Okay, who the hell is the somebody? What did we get back for it? Where did that go? I mean, you know, I see people opening up shops and things around here. They close after 6 months. Nobody's helping them. I mean, it's just, we're not doing some stuff right here. And the people that I care about seem to be the people that always go over the fence last. How's that for an unfair statement? But it's the truth, in my opinion. I mean, how much help are you guys getting in what you're doing?
What do you mean, from the...
Well, just in general. I mean, you have a bazillion people. I mean, this student loan situation, to me, is an absolute fiasco. I mean, how we got there, how much people are charging for education, the fact that kids can't go to school anymore, I mean, without having some big, huge debt that isn't worth it. I mean, Kevin's people put together a fine education for a lot less dough, right? And yet people get all
these... We send like 86% of our students out with credentials and no debt.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I think that's great. But now when you go back and you say, okay, what should have federal rules, student loans was not a good situation beforehand, but then we federalized it during the Obama administration and made it worse.
I don't know if they made it worse. I thought it cut the interest rate, most people.
I think they made it worse.
Made it worse.
What they did was they probably made it too available.
I'm talking about the adjustment they made between the private and the public.
Yeah, they basically commandeered all the loans.
Okay, but right, explain to me this, because a couple guys in the building had these. I'm going back 15 years now, before Obama did that, or the Obama administration. It seemed then most people had a combination of a federal piece somewhere in the threes and a private piece somewhere in the high fives, low sixes. Does that make sense? And then what the Obama group did is somehow combined them together at like a five or something like that, five and a quarter. The kid upstairs in my building is paying, I think he said, paying five and a half. And he was one that was combined. Now, I don't know what his ratio was before, where they had more than the 6.5 and less than the 3.5. But we've had a period of how many presidents have had interest rates for the cool guys at 1.5, 2, 3. I don't want Amazon borrowing at 2.5% when we're charging our kids 5.5. I mean, whose idea was that? And why can't we get people on both sides of that?
And no ability to discharge it in bankruptcy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, Russell, you had the young lady on from the finance department, and she's calculating her life, and part of her life is dealing with these loans. And
I'm still paying PhD loans.
Yeah, well, I get it
because it's such a low interest rate loan, but. And then, you know, I didn't have to make payments for 3 years or so, and I was actually trying to pay it off early, just to kind of get it out of the way. But now I'm like, I'm going to slow pay that thing. I'll probably die I'm actually kind of hoping I die before the thing's paid off.
I hope one of your lovely daughters didn't co-sign. I'll be after her.
There's no co-signer. Actually, I think my father was a co-signer, and he's dead. So
they'll go after him.
Yeah. Good luck getting that out of my old dead hands.
They'll get it out of his estate.
Yes. So who's got an interest in this? Because we just want to make sure nobody kills Russell. Hey, guys, I got to go.
All right.
Have fun the rest of the way, and we'll talk soon.
I was just going to dig up the CPI calculator, but I'm sure you can imagine what it is from our years at Notre Dame, Kevin, versus today. I'm going to say the tuition when we were there brought forth with our useless CPI calculator would be like $19,000. And I think, what is it, 70?
Well, you got to separate tuition, room, and board.
Oh, okay. I mean,
so if you're doing tuition, if it was all in, it wouldn't be 19,000. It would probably be something higher than that. But if it's just tuition, it'd probably be 19,000.
While you're here, okay, my last year, tuition was 3,200, and the room and board was 1,000 because I didn't have to pay it because I was an RA. All right, so let's put 4,200 in here. We'll say January. What are we talking about? June of 1974. Showing my age here. Where are we? 1974 through September of 2024. What would you guys guess be? All in.
About 25,000.
You know, Kevin's pretty good at this. 27. What is it? 80?
It's 80.
Yeah.
According to the Department of Education, it's 80, and that's a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and what's room and board at Northwestern's, what, 16 or something like that? I better be living in a pretty nice place.
Well, at Northwestern, you probably are.
We don't have to eat mystery meat, but still.
Like you do have to with inflation, like on automobiles and trucks and things like that. You do have to account for the better food that they get versus the crap they used to feed us and a whole bunch of things like that. But even so, it's a ripoff. And a lot of that is what happens. Well, we have managed to find ways to flood the tuition market with federal money, and what happens when you flood anything with money? You get inflation. So,
but you also have a cost creep. If you're paying that much, we got to have 15 psychologists. We got to have this. We got to have counselors. Okay, you actually don't.
We need our climbing wall.
Yeah, you always talk about the football. I mean, as much money as football gets, they find a way to spend it.
Oh yeah.
All of a sudden,
just go look at the organization chart for any athletic department. It's so damn bloated you wouldn't believe it.
But hey, by the way, speaking of athletics, did Russell make out Indiana's schedule?
I totally was involved in that. I totally prepped us up to.
You guys got to play
strong.
He's also doing game plans.
Yeah, I mean, you got to play one hard game out of 11. How'd you manage to pull that off?
Well, you know, they had Washington, and Washington was supposed to be good. And I'll bet you when Washington looked at their schedule, they were like, well, thank God we get to play Indiana this
year.
Yeah, the thing I will say for Indiana, even though the schedule's been light, is they've been beating the crap out of everybody there.
Yeah.
They have. I mean, that with the exception of Michigan State, I guess they were 4-4, maybe they're 4-5. That's not a fun place to go play.
No. But they've been terrible for so long.
Even when they're bad, they tend to knock a team or two off.
Weren't those the guys where the offensive line wasn't going to play because they didn't get paid?
Yeah, that was a few years ago.
It was a few weeks ago.
That was on a road game.
It was a few weeks ago in Southern Cal, right? It was like early in the season, wasn't it, Kevin? He's gone.
I don't remember, but I got to go.
All right, take care, bud. So, Russell, we have... the market to the moon here. We got gold down, because interest rates are flying up. We've got the dollar stronger, so that's pushing down on gold. What do you make of this? Is this the blow off top? Is this we're gonna take off from here?
I think the markets like him.
Well,
and I think the exit polling yesterday. I was on a podcast last night and. I got beaten up pretty badly because about 8:45 our time, I was like, he's won this thing. Well, you don't know that. Blah, blah.
Oh yeah, he was in there from the start, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, I was watching. You know, they have those binary markets. About 9 o'clock last night, the betting market went from like 40% chance that he wins the popular vote to 70. In about a 5-minute period, somebody knew something.
How much of there's no answer to this, but
the Michigan State NIL thing was last year.
Okay.
This year it was last. I knew it was last. I knew it wasn't
okay.
This season.
How much of
last year?
The popular vote thing. I mean, it comes and it goes. I mean, yesterday.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. You know, you're not going to hear bitching about getting rid of the Electoral College now.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this,
we've heard it for a while.
But my question is, how much does one state everybody knows where it's going to go. How much does that hurt the popular vote?
Oh, years ago, one of the presidents in our lifetime that everybody likes to depict as being dumb, somebody asked W about the Electoral College, et cetera, and W said, "Well, I didn't set foot in California. I wasn't going to win that state." He said, "If this were a popular vote thing, I'd have spent a ton of time in California trying to get by." So, the strategy behind the election would be very different.
Well, I mean, yesterday, the popular vote in Illinois didn't go like it normally does for the Democrat. A little less, okay? Maybe a lot less.
I think you could say that about just about every state.
Okay, but what my point is, when I walked down the block yesterday, I'm not going to tell you guys which one of you I voted for, but there's the presidential thing, which of course is a fait accompli in Illinois, according to everybody. We haven't seen one commercial. Nobody's been here, so okay, fine. It's not in our hands. Let's see how the people in Pennsylvania do it, basically. Okay, so then we got Quigley, who's running against some schlump, so he's going to win. We've got the state's attorney's race, which I found somewhat important. Why it was today and not when the county and the state and all the rest of the people do it, I have no idea. So that was the vote for the school board, which is hotly contested. That's kind of the reason. That's kind of the reason why I walked down the block. Then there's four pages of judges. I mean, what would the popular vote in Illinois have been if it was decided by a popular vote? I have to believe on both sides it's up by 20%. Why wouldn't it be?
I'm sure it would be.
So I mean,
there have been years that I've lived here, and I'm more conservative. I always tell people that, you know, where I grew up, the Democrats would be a Republican up here. So you just gotta give me a little bit of a break on that one. It was part of my formative years, etc. But I'm always going to be stuck that way. I could hang a little sign around my neck, convince me to change my views, and I don't think anybody would be able to do it at this point. I feel like the whole election this time around, I really feel like the Democrats just themselves in the foot.
Oh, I kind of went through with Kevin.
Everybody sits around and says, we basically had the two bad choices, and we had to pick between the two bad choices.
Right.
The Democratic Party had a whole lot of good choices they could have put up there.
I don't understand.
They do.
I don't know if you were on. Were you on earlier when I was talking to Kevin about that?
No. But I think it's a common. If I did not hear you talking about it.
Well, what I said was
Cory Booker, for instance, could have held his own. And they needed, if they had put somebody up, and then they had also put someone up that was actually willing to take a stand on something, just like Kevin was just saying, she never in the interviews she said a lot of cute soundbitey type things, but I don't. She was asked. I saw an impromptu question where somebody asked her if she had voted, and she goes, "Yes, I filled everything out and I voted by mail because she's registered in California." And they asked her how she voted on Prop 36, which I don't even know what Prop 36 is in California. And she said, "Well, I just don't want to talk about that. I don't want to influence people's thinking behind that this close to the election."
We had four of those.
That is the person that is running for president.
We had four of those on the
not take a position on that.
Well,
I don't even know what I'm looking it up now, but it doesn't matter. I don't care what it. It's increased penalties for certain theft and drug crimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mentioned.
Do you have an opinion on increasing penalties for repeated theft offenses and certain drug crimes?
We had four
she's
of those.
She's got
here.
No opinion. She's got no opinion on that. That was her job.
Well, it's
like she's asking her about something about the Tennessee Valley.
But you
authority.
Have to be. See, you and Kevin are going at this like you're professors, and it's your business. It's not your business. It's the business of politics. In the business of politics, unfortunately, and Trump knows this better than anybody, you can take the low road and you can influence people that way, which he did. Despite what people said, he didn't. He did. But also, one thing my little shot into politics was when I ran for the CBOE board. Very little, very sliver of shot. You learn very early that if you got a room of 100 people, if you say something definitive, the people who agree with you are probably not going to change their mind and vote for you because of what you just said. The five or six people who actually care about that issue, if you say the wrong thing, you're going to lose their vote forever. It's not an even game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as I would like, if it was me or you, we would always have taken an opinion on Prop 36 or 37. But if you're in that, it's like if you had 100 people in a room and five of them work for the city, okay, and you say, what do you think about the city of Chicago? God, it's so inefficient. We need to fire half the people that work for the city. Well, 95 people there are going to say, rah, rah. They're probably not going to change their vote for you because of that. The five that work for the city are going, I'm not voting for this ass. So you don't gain votes by saying something intelligent necessarily. You lose them by screwing with people. Now Trump,
yeah.
I mean, Trump, I think gained votes by telling bartenders he's not going to tax tips. Well, I don't see how that gets through Congress anywhere. Like you say, there is some sort of, I mean, that's insane. Yet I'm going to say that 20% of the people there actually think he's going to do that for them. Okay, and he might actually, on the low road, you can gain a vote. You see all these drug problems you have? They're not you, mm-hmm. They're not your neighbors, they're not your kids, they're not the fact that drugs have been here forever, it's all these immigrants. They brought these drugs in. Now, if I get rid of those people, all your problems are solved. Okay, you and I are going to go, I don't know if I'd buy that, but people do. People do, especially when they're economically desperate, in the idea that it's somebody else's fault, not yours. It's a tried and true playbook. And most people in this country, which the Democrats don't get, and like the rank and file Republicans, I don't think get. Trump probably does. He knows people pretty well. He realizes that people here are stressed. They're not as stressed.
Yeah.
They're not as stressed as 1920s Germany or anything like that. But they are stressed, and the idea is, we've had 25, 30 years where people's salary has not kept up with expenses. And they look at their life and they go, the young lady you had on 2 weeks ago, she was spectacular. Your daughter was spectacular too, but the one before her, she's trying to plot her life together. And I don't think she has too many student loans, but now she's probably looking at grad school and how that adds to the total. Her plotting coming out of college is so much different than mine. I didn't know anybody at Diamond. My family didn't have any money. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, the world was my oyster. These kids don't feel the same. When the hell is she going to get a house unless she finds some dude who doesn't have a loan and can pay for it? I mean, I know that's kind of trite, but the fact is, is she going to go out and buy a $45,000 car? Who the hell is going to give her the loan? I mean, this is nuts. It's been a 25-year phenomenon that all the money's going to a few people. Do I think Trump has the ability or the intelligence to figure out what's going on here and change it? I don't think that at all. Now why the Democrats, and Mike Quigley, you were on the show, and I said, I'm not a massive fan of Mike Quigley's, but when this started about Biden, he should have announced a year ago, you know what, I've decided not to run for a second term. They should have had a regular primary.
Oh God, yeah. And this loops around to what I was saying about that party just really. Yes.
Well, Mike Quigley said even at the late day.
I don't know if it was they didn't want to step on anybody's toes. They didn't want to, you know, if we just don't automatically put Kamala in there, are we going to lose a certain vote over that? I really don't understand what the thinking was, because, you know. It's not like this suddenly happened in June debate.
No.
In fact, there's a. I think it will become. I think people are going to start to find out that was kind of by design.
Well, but it's the whole point is.
They had time to plan for this crap.
Right. Well, they had
contingency. Hell, the Republicans should have a contingency plan just in case. We get to January 20th, and you know Trump's in his 80s, I think he's or late 70s, yeah. Whatever. But you know you should have something in the back of your mind around you know if if something were to happen to Trump and they had to elevate J.D. Vance or whatever, you know, who do they want to put in?
But
as
Trump's
a VP?
Trump's a one-termer. He's a one-termer.
Yeah, well, he's definitely No, I'm talking about between now and January 20th. I'm talking about just in case, because like things. I'm not saying somebody's going to get him.
I'm just saying you want to have a
succession plan.
I got a stupid question. Yeah. If Trump has a grabber tomorrow, Vance doesn't get the job, does he?
You know, if Trump has a grabber tomorrow. And that's really what I think would happen is the delegate, we elected the delegates, and the delegates, the Republican delegates, would get together and figure out who they want.
Okay.
I don't think it would automatically. I mean, I think legally, and I think it varies a bit from state to state as far as your obligations go. There's some states where, you know, you can, you know, like somebody voted for Bernie Sanders instead of voting for Hillary when Trump won.
Right.
Just for the heck of it. You know, so I do think that flexibility is in there, and I do think it varies from state to state. So, you know, I'm sure that, again, I'm sure there's a contingency in place there as well. And I believe the Electoral College is on January 7th this year. So if something happens between now and then, you know, there is a possibility that, you know, that they would have to make a different decision. But here's the thing. If they had to make a different decision, it's going to be done by a vote. They didn't vote to be the candidate.
Well, that's my point.
And I do think that there's a certain group of people in America that feel like you should earn something. She's done a lot of, you know, she's done a lot of public service. It's not like she sat around on her ass and not done anything career wise for the last 35 years, but she didn't specifically, like, it's almost like
she didn't earn the nomination.
Let's say you were a career man at Pullman and you reached a certain level, and then all of a sudden, you know, the nephew of the CEO is your boss. It's like, yeah. Well, what the hell did he do? I've been here for 30 years. I know everything. You know, I think there are a certain number of people that took a look at that. They're like,
I actually think the primary system, although we've totally screwed it up the last few times, I think, by making people get out of it after a couple of states. But I think there's a hardening process there. If there mm-hmm. would have been more respect for her if... Plus, I'm curious. Answer me this. I mean, this is not a Republican-Dem question. Why, in the primary process, was somebody told to not run against Biden? I mean, why did nobody try and run against him from the Democratic side?
Who?
He wasn't opposed in Iowa or New Hampshire or any place, was he?
He tried.
Who?
Robert F. Kennedy tried to run for president this time around.
He didn't run. He was not in the Iowa primary.
He tried. He couldn't get on the ballot and stuff. They basically, for lack of a better way to do it, they cock-blocked anybody that wanted to try to run against Biden.
So he didn't get the signatures in Iowa. How many signatures need to be on a primary ballot?
I don't know specifically if he got the. He got the signatures, etc. But
by the way, he was on the ballot here as a third party. He was on my ballot last night.
He was on, he was on the ballot here.
Yes, he got. Yes, he got like that one. Yes, he got like 5% of the vote or something. I don't know that he ever tried to actually run. I mean, we'll find this out. We'll talk about it tomorrow, maybe. But the what I'm saying is, there was they made it so that nobody ran against him. Now, Mike Quigley, I've mentioned this about five times. Mike Quigley, when it started to go down, his advice was, let's do it fast enough. We're going to do it so we can have a nationwide primary so the person who gets the nomination actually has earned it. And I think Mike was very, you know, smart by saying that, and it never happened. They dragged it on, and then they said, okay, we're just going to the convention. It'll be Kamala. Well, I don't think that was the right thing to do. People felt she didn't earn a spot.
Right.
I mean, Trump.
No, the Democrats set it up. They set the whole thing up where they really didn't want to go through the primaries.
So
whatever they did.
But was there
that's why RFK moved over to Trump. because he wanted to, you know, he wanted to challenge, and within the party that, that his family, you know, used to be royalty in.
Well, okay, and, so who's running these? Who's running the place? Who's making these decisions?
Soros.
What?
Well, I said George Soros, but I'm just kidding. I know
somebody is. Is it still
now, you know, there's you know, dark back, there's smart cigar smoking backroom guys making all these.
Is decisions. It still the Valerie Jarrett CIA connection thing, which people?
I have no idea on that one, but I mean, you know, Robert F. Kennedy's his whole frustration was that the party that he wanted to run for, you know, president under, because that's his family's party. They made it so difficult for him. He's like, this is not the, you know, this is not the party that my dad and my uncle were part of.
Well, it's certainly not so, Robert Kennedy, you know, his dad, you know, sees that the first few primaries, you know, there doesn't seem to be a leader, and he dove in late. He wins California. If he won a couple others, he'd have gone to they don't want you doing that now. I mean, if you win the first two, we say we got a break here and talk about what the market's doing, because the market's doing a lot here. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 130, 133. NASDAQ futures up 368. It's all right in the world. And I was saying earlier, I'm not going to say that I expected something like this to happen. The market has been pretty strong lately. And the Russell is the biggest mover. And it's up 6.5%. The IWM is up $14. And that's one of our biggest holdings for our people, so it's a good one for us. And we're, you know, we have a lot of people wanting Russell for some, you know, a lot of the clients when we work with our programs, and people are in different ETFs. You know, we have a huge position as XLV. That's the healthcare. That's up like 2.25% today too. So this is a huge day for PTI clients here, which is nice. It's always good to have that going. You know, it's always nice when your people make money and.
It's like a consolation.
Yeah, even if you don't like the outcome, which probably some people don't, some people do. As long as you're making money, it makes it better, right? Duh. Dow's up 13.08. Individual stocks. Well, the one that did banks, J.P. Morgan's up $15. Tesla, Elon Musk, Trump's new best boyfriend, is up $32. That's interesting. We have Nvidia is only $1.79. We get. Everything in the transportation average is up, pretty much. We got Caterpillar up 27. It was up a bunch yesterday. Microsoft's up 5. So it's a celebratory day here for sure. United Healthcare is up 38. I'm not so sure. Is Trump that? I don't know if he's that bullish for the healthcare industry, is he? But everybody's taking him.
That's one industry I thought would actually do better at
the. Yeah, well, okay. We're the DAX up 61.3%, so not
big,
much. FTSE, which was up a percentage, now is not. The 0.7, $62, still a lot. CAC round up 59.8, so bullishness over in Europe. Asia, big old mix here. Nikkei's up 1,000, that's 2.6. Hang Seng is down 468, that's 2.2. And Shanghai is flat, which Russell's going to have to explain to us how one's to the moon, one's in the crapo, and one's flat. That's pretty interesting. Bonds, here's kind of the bad piece of news, though. Interest rates are up 15 basis points, 4.44. I mean, Trump's going to have to deal with that. I mean, a 10-year rate, I think, is going higher. And that's we got a lot of money that we're borrowing in case anybody checked. Oil, down $1.91, right to the middle of the range here at $70, almost even, $70.08. Brent down $1.87, $73.66. Natural gas up 3 cents, $2.70. RBOB down 5 cents, back under $2, $1.98. We have gold, whack whack on the gold, down $60, 2%, because the dollar's strong and interest rates are up. So both of those work against gold. Silver down $1.25, $21.52. We are long some of that, but thank God we got some puts in the way, so it won't be so bad. FX, this is a big move, a 2% move in the dollar against the euro, down to 107 the euro is. That's the lowest it's been in like a real long time, and again, we have Russell Cameron on that. British pound down a little bit, but not as much, 1.4%. Japan up almost 2%, down almost 2%, sorry. When Japan is up 2.55, Japan up means the yen is, the value of the yen is down. It's the opposite of the other two, I keep saying. Crypto. Trump's going to love crypto. He loves crypto. Up 4,600, 74,071. It did top 75,000. It's come 1,000 off its high. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? No NBA. They took the whole day off. Everybody go vote.
Yeah, nothing for sports today. It is 7:36 here in Chicago on Wednesday, November 6th. Yeah, jumping straight into weather. It's currently 51 degrees here in Chicago. We're going to have a high of 54 today. It's going to stay pretty consistent throughout the day. Cool, less humid than it's been. We're going to have some clouds and a little bit of sun here and there. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 48 degrees. They're going to have a cooler day. They're going to have a high of 69. They're going to have similar vibes of sun and clouds, a little bit of mix of both. Finally, over to Chicago traffic. Things are pretty heavy in the red today, both on the inbound and the out. If you're coming out on the south side, things are a little bit easier, both going in and out. But otherwise, if you're coming in from the Kennedy, things are pretty blocked up. Nearly all the way from downtown to the start of the Kennedy. Looks like only accident to report is on Jackson Boulevard. That's on the Eisenhower Expressway. But that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
So, Russell, we have
question that has just been blown up because of yesterday.
What?
The trivia question used to be the trivia question used to be, what days have any professional sports in the United States? And it's actually the day before and the day after the MLB All-Star Game, because the other sports aren't going. But if there were no NBA games, it wasn't just the Bulls and the there were none. So that ruins that whole bar trivia.
Well, they have the there was hockey last night. I saw some at the Tripoli.
Oh, was there some hockey? Okay, well,
yeah.
Never mind.
I think there was some hockey.
And we're gonna run out of time. And I don't know if I had made the major announcement that Latte got adopted.
Yes, you told me anyway.
I'm gonna make sure I told you.
In approval of the family and everything?
I'm very much in approval of the family. It's a little bit more of a blue collar family. And I don't mean that as any kind of criticism, because God, I wish I could work with my hands like these guys do. And they have another Frenchie. Guy has the dude has put a window in the fence so the dogs can see who's walking by. every window in the house has steps leading up to the window and a little ledge that the dogs can sit on. It's like the most dog friendly house in the world.
Really,
so Latte is living her best life. I miss her terribly.
You think you need another one?
No, we don't need another one.
All right.
So, sorry. I just wanted to deviate into good news there.
What if somebody drops one on the door, you know?
No, nobody's dropping a dog on our door.
You're not doing any more fostering?
Well, we've got two right now. We've got one that, you know, was hospice.
Yeah.
And the hospice dog, who was supposed to live 6 months... now that we are in November, she has been with us for 2 years and 9 months,
and she's doing fine.
She's doing great. So we still got a good baby.
Well, Jimmy Carter's been in hospice forever too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, I was at a Braves game years ago, and he would always sit, you know, like sit where Ted Turner would sit, you know, like right by the bat boy. And there was a screaming foul ball, and Jimmy Carter jumped up, caught it with both hands.
Really?
I mean, they caught it on the big screen. It was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen.
Do you remember a guy in the trading floor? He's still around. I see him once in a while. Kevin Kennedy?
Yeah, I know.
Kevin's
one
of the nicest guys. When I had my tickets,
Yeah.
When I had my tickets, Kevin would always buy some of my Cub tickets. And we were first row upper deck, and you know, right on looking down at third baseline. So they were absolutely terrific.
I love those seats.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, nobody jumped up in front of you, none of that stuff. And so Kevin's got the seats one night, and he's got the two. And Big Dan, when Big Dan and I would split the seats. If there's a three game series, we each get one game where we got four tickets, and the other game we'd split the two. Right, we get two and two. Mm-hmm. So Kevin has the two seats the one night, and it's a night game. It's a national TV game. So the two guys next to him, he goes, one of them, they're both a couple of coppers, right? And one guy's just this huge dude, big, strong guy, 6'5", 6'6". He goes, he's sitting there, and he's drinking beer after beer, and it's not even phasing him, right? A screaming foul ball comes up there, you know, right? He's in the front row. He says, the guy's got his beer in his right hand.
Mm-hmm.
He sees the ball coming right at him, shifts his beer to his left hand while the ball's on the way, reaches up with one hand and snags it. And the ball is smoking. Snags it, puts it in his pocket, shifts the beer to the other hand, and never stopped his conversation. Well, he's on national TV. So Kevin's phone starts going off. Kevin, is that you next to that guy who just caught the ball like it was nothing? He's like, he must have got like 15 texts and phone calls from buddies from college.
Everybody knows him. He was, yeah. And actually, I just sent him an email while we were talking. When I would take groups around the floor and stuff, he was always so entertaining with them.
Oh yeah, I mean just
you know, that, and I'm not talking about him posthumously or anything like that. Looks like he hung it up back in 2022.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of the nice guys.
When you mentioned his name, because I go over to, I'm actually going to the SIBO floor this afternoon.
I've never seen him before.
It just occurred to me that I'd never see him on the floor anymore, so that's why I started digging him.
Well, yeah, but all of a sudden, he goes, I got a text from a guy in college. I hadn't seen him like 20. Kevin, is that you? I mean, it's amazing what people, you know, the high-def cameras and how, you know, but he said this guy, the movement was unbelievable. The guy never even, was like it was nothing. It was a line drive, and he caught it with one hand. Guy must have been a hell of a softball player. Anyway, so what, out of all the stuff that we've seen in the campaigns, I mean, in all the you know, the crap, in my opinion, not the crap, the campaign stuff that I don't think we're going to see a carve out on income tax for tips. I don't think we're going to see a carve out for overtime. And I'm looking right here. Well, I will look right here in a second. I had two people this weekend tell me how fantastic it's going to be to not have to pay income tax because we're just going to raise the tariffs. And I'm going, oh my God.
Most likely not.
There's stuff you can say to people, and I don't know why they're so freaking gullible, but mm-hmm. but they can be. I'm just looking. I mean, how many people have ever even looked at these? I'm looking here at the nationaldebtclock.org. You know,
it's terrible.
No, I'm not.
There's one right around the block, or right around the corner from where my daughter goes to school with.
Well, I'm looking here. The total federal tax revenue is 2.4 trillion of income tax, 1.6 in payroll tax, 83 in excise taxes, which is what, gas and that kind of thing, 30 in estate and gift tax, and 69 billion in tariffs. So the tariffs are what? They're like 69 going into 23.7. It's got to be, is it 2%, 1% of the income tax revenue? Not even. And we're gonna try and even that up. I mean, all you have to do is look at this and go, what is this guy talking about? Now, does that just die? It never. I think they're gonna raise some tariffs.
That's where the you brought up the and first off, Shanghai, Hang Seng and Shanghai are both Chinese indexes.
Right.
The Shanghai index is going to be more controlled by the Chinese Communist Party than the Hang Seng. Hang Seng trades in Hong Kong. So it's a better indication of what people actually think about those markets. And you know, the one equity market that needs to be concerned about Donald Trump is China, because of the tariff thing.
Well,
I'll tell you exactly. I was positioned short the S&P and short China today, going into today, and the short China is totally offsetting my short S&P loss.
Okay.
I thought stocks had already I thought U.S. stocks had already discounted a Trump victory. I was wrong on that one.
I thought they did too. They were up so much yesterday.
Yeah.
But the question regarding tariffs. Now, most people, most economists, all right, which you clearly are, would say, if you got your blackboard out showing my age, and you were to start talking about tariffs, virtually everybody from Milton Friedman on down would say, in general, they're a bad idea, okay, because they stifle competition, they do all kinds of stuff. Now, but going forward, I mean, from the time those guys were alive and did all that stuff, when you have, I won't even talk about China. I'll say the U.S. has some pollution laws, and you can't, you know, pour crap in a river, okay? Right across the river in the Rio Grande is Mexico. So somebody says, well, okay, how about if I put the factory over there, shut this one down, and I'll pour the crap in the river from the other side? You know, again, this is a very simple thing. I think, Russell, if I was a teacher, the simpler you can get on a problem, sometimes people have to learn the basics. Now, is that guy okay to come sell his crap here without an additional fee? Call it tariff. No, because we still now have to clean the river, which we didn't want to do, just coming in from the other side. Now, what Carl has talked about is, you know, a lot of what's wrong in this country labor-wise is we've essentially offshored child labor and pollution to a huge extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the reason why you're picking up a pair of blue jeans from China is because they're paying somebody one-tenth of what they're paying them here, and they don't care if they're 12 years old or not. And, oh, by the way, blue jeans with all the dyes and all the stuff is kind of a dirty deal, and we don't really want to do them here. So we ship the cotton to China. They make the blue jeans and ship the blue jeans back, right? Isn't that the way that works generally?
Mm-hmm.
So Carl was thinking, and I don't know, you'd have to have Harry Houdini do this, but that somehow or another there should be a tariff that equalizes that. You know, in other words, if they're getting labor for $10 a blue jean less because they're 14 years old, and by the way, they're pouring, you know, crap into the air, which maybe eventually get here, they shouldn't be able to sell their blue jeans for 50 when here they're 75. We should find a way to even that up so it doesn't benefit somebody to go over there and make the blue jeans instead of doing it right here. Now, I don't know how you do that. In theory, I guess I don't have much of a problem with it. But now, that's not the same kind of tariff we're talking about, just a tariff to be a tariff. There's a tariff there for, quote, a purpose. What do you make of it? I don't see how it's doable, actually, in terms of who the hell gets to decide how much people are actually saving over there. And what if somebody has a plan over there where they don't use child labor? Do they still have to pay? It brings up a million questions. But just in general, from your PhD upstairs brain, what do you think? Is any attempt like that just going to be a disaster or what?
See, I personally think that if your tariffs, they really shouldn't be punitive, but they should be in place to maintain a level playing field for your, you know, for workers in your own country. Well, that's how I feel like it should be used. And the way that I feel like you should be backing into the numbers, and this is not how it's done, but this is how I think it should be done. You should back into the numbers. If there's a Chinese company that's using, you know, forced labor, which they do have a lot of forced labor.
God,
over
yeah.
there, and they've got a car that's basically exactly like, a Tesla, we'll just say, because China's trying to become the leader in electric cars. I think the tariff should allow Tesla to remain price competitive.
Okay.
I think one other thing with respect to the tariffs, and a lesson that we learned is we don't want to be, I know a lot of people get upset over this, but we don't want to be fully integrated in the rest of the world. Don't want it because you end up being dependent on other countries for things. And you want to take a look at what, you know, couldn't import anything from other parts of the world, where would be tomorrow?
Russell,
where would be
Russell,
in,
how do you
be in trouble?
How do you
that brings me to a friggin' loaded question that I probably don't even want to ask, but I will. I don't know if you happened to listen in on Friday, where Carl and on Thursday, Carl and Lou were on at the same time. We had a little cross pollination there, and my questions to Lou were, in terms of the supply chain, how many? Because he sent me an article regarding missiles, you know, and how we procure however many of these a year and have been for a long time. And oh, by the way, we just shot off like 2 years' supplies of million-dollar missiles chasing drones that cost $20,000. So we're behind on these things. And Carl knows,
right?
Well, Carl,
China's huge on them.
But he was saying that if you look at, you know, nobody knows this stuff like he does because he's in the computer business. Is if you look at the parts of the missiles and all the like the computer parts, if we're not talking about a Scud, we're not talking about a dumb missile, we're talking about a real missile that can, you know, that finds the target and blasts it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the amount of parts in one of those things, which, you know, after seeing a railroad car go together, and how many thousands of parts are on that, he says there's hundreds and hundreds, maybe 1,000 part in the thing. He said so many of them, even the little stuff, in the computer piece, that you don't think it's just there. Some little thing with a wire attached to it might be the power piece that drops the voltage down from something to something for that. Because all that stuff is sourced overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to even get a list of all these parts that you absolutely need would be a yeoman's job. And oh, by the way, to have somebody here make them all or encourage somebody to do that, he goes, we're a ways away from that. He goes, but my question is, on the defense side, which you're not usually involved in the conversation, but you sure could be because you're bright enough, it looks to me like between what's going on with Iran, what's going on with China, and surely what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, there's three people that are doing their best to nip us right in the ass, money-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the, you know, the Ronald Reagan, what he did to, what was his name, Gorbachev? You know, we outspent the hell out of them until they
yeah.
went broke. You know, it didn't help us much either. It kind of put us on the deficit bandwagon. But
you know, well, I do think it set us up for the really good 1990s.
Okay, but it also
I do. I feel like
we also started rolling up money that we owed. Okay, but my point is, if China, do they really give a crap that much about Taiwan being the orphan child, or if they grab Taiwan, what does that do to us? And they said we're not giving you guys nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to work over there because you're getting it all from here. What? How?
Yeah.
How? If you know, if Trump, I hope the guy is smarter than I think he is, if his first day in office he says, I want to know how much we have no sources for our planes, for our missiles, mm-hmm. for our stuff without these guys. I want a list of crap and I want it made here in 6 months somehow. Now, can we even do that?
It doesn't even have to be here.
Oh, right.
It looks south, man.
Well, I'm not talking, I'm saying
all these people are trying to come from, you know, from South America and Central America. You know, it sounds so cold when you say cheap labor, et cetera, but you could do low cost production.
Well, yeah, but how do you blow that through?
You buy NAFTA, isn't it?
Yeah, but how do you blow through the Venezuelan government, for God's sake?
Venezuelan government?
Well, I mean, are you going to play ball with those guys? Put up a factory?
No. You don't have to play ball with the Venezuelan government. You play ball with the Mexican government. There's Belize. I think they speak English in Belize. But there are several countries down there. Right, I think Colombia has become a much more modern, you know, non-narco state place to do business. Country was I think. Oh, I mean, hell, look at what they've done in El Salvador.
Okay, what I'm saying is,
I mean, they put all the criminals in jail, and now it's kind of a nice place to be. There are countries that are closer to us that we should be friendlier with. We should be doing business with.
All right. Okay. My point here, as usual, we kind of wander off, but we need to get it. How? I'm going to say that that's probably a great idea, but it's going to take longer to do it there than it would here. My point is, how dependent really are we and how much would it really, with our deficits and everything else, how much would it wound us if they cut off everything from Taiwan from us? I'm thinking it's a lot.
It would really be the semiconductor thing, and we're working on getting that here.
But how much?
For
how
that
much?
Very reason. And it take and it, you don't just slap up a semiconductor fab.
But how much of every little part? How much
and
of every?
It's one of the things that the Biden administration and Kamala should have been talking about.
But if you look into what's it?
What they've been doing with trying to bring back the critical industries here, like semiconductor fabs.
All right, but I guess what I'm trying to clumsily get at here is it not just that's the word everybody looks like. We got to get some semiconductors here. But how much of the stuff in the micro center, if you go in that huge computer store, which I don't know where any of this stuff even is, how much of all the crap down every aisle, the connectors, the adapters, all how much of that stuff is just made in regular China? I bet it's 80%.
A good portion of it, but the higher end chips, they do not have the technology or the ability to make those chips.
Okay, but I'm saying,
and those are the those are the NVIDIA.
Right, I'm having trouble here communicating. What Carl was talking about is the everyday crap you don't even think about that you can't begin to put this missile together with. Almost all the little bleep is made over there too, and the little bleep is hard to make.
We're bringing all of that back to here.
Okay,
we're not going to rely on them with that anymore. We learned an extremely valuable lesson over COVID about being able to take care of ourselves. One of the reasons that we are a superpower is when it really comes down to it, we don't have to rely on anybody for any essentials.
We can be
energy independent. We can feed ourselves right now. We can feed ourselves with the current population of the country. When you hear that you've got one person running for president that is more about our country, and the other person comes across as maybe being more of a globalist, you're coming out of college and you look around the world, you look around the country, and you're like, man, there's just no hope for me. I'm saddled with debt. I'm never going to own a house, etc. Do you vote for the status quo, or do you
fortunately
vote for somebody that maybe will shake things up?
The only problem is the guy was already in there for 4 years.
He was in there, and he was doing a damn good job.
Let's not argue about that. I don't think he did squat. But
I mean, he's a jackass, and I totally agree with that. But he was. I feel like he did a pretty darn good job until the COVID thing came up and bit him in the butt.
Right, but you're.
I felt like we were on a pretty good track.
Fortunately for you, maybe he'll never change. Hopefully, never. You and your family are at an age where you're not dealing with people that are sick. Okay, I think you'd probably find that a huge percentage of all the common drugs that people take here, antibiotics, everything else, are not made here. Scarily so.
There's been there've been different. I mean, hell, there were. I've heard college students begging for Adderall back in the spring.
Well, I mean,
because there was a big shortage of it.
And maybe that's a good thing, but that's
another. I don't know. You could totally see test scores go down when there was the Adderall. I'm totally making that up. Don't quote that as that was a joke. I'm not saying that is totally a joke.
But I mean, I've known people who have. The stuff that's here is so friggin' expensive, and the generics are made in China, and a lot of times the generics don't work, even though they're supposed to.
Oh, I know.
And by the way, and so you're
my wife won't let me take generics.
Well, but this is the same question.
It's a healthcare problem.
Now, if somebody makes a drug here, I think we're up their ass constantly making sure the place is clean and does the stuff properly. Somebody makes it in China, we don't care. We just let it in. There's no inspections, no nothing. I mean, I don't know that that's. I think maybe there ought to be a. Again, the execution would be horrible. Maybe there ought to be a fee that somebody checks the stuff one out of 1,000 pills when it gets here and make sure it's okay, and somebody has to pay for that. Like maybe them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of questions here. But the idea that this is all easy to bring back. We've got these international companies. They don't care about our people.
No.
I mean,
no, no.
Are we going to make the next time there's going to be a merger from a drug company overseas and buying one of our people? Is Trump going to say no? I'm going to say he won't.
He might.
He won't. When was the last time a Republican was against a merger? Not many Democrats either, by the way.
It depends if it's, you know, a foreign company taking control of something that's kind of critical to us. I think that both sides would be on. They're all in somebody's pocket on crap like that.
Yeah, I mean are we really going to see? Like you and I both think we need a serious change in direction, and where government's headed. And if Trump pulls it off, I'm with him. I'm with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with him. I mean, he's going to be my president and yours, I'm with him. I hope he doesn't spend 70% of his time sniping at people he thinks did him wrong. He's got to put that in the back.
I'm really hoping that, you know. So, right. I'm hoping so as well. But you know what? I mean, goodness gracious, 12 years ago. You know, when he won in the big surprise and everything, and I was talking some people off the, I'm sorry, man. I was up till 3 a.m. podcasting.
Really?
Yeah. And now I'm here. So yeah, I'm on fumes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The last 8 years was almost like it was a combined. I don't know if I want anyone of either one of those administrations back in
there. But 8 years ago when I was talking people off the web.
Yeah,
I was really hopeful. I was really hopeful that he would, that other business leaders would start to get involved in politics. And we saw a little bit of it, and they got beaten down so much they decided to. And I'm thinking about the dude from Starbucks.
Yeah.
CEO of Starbucks wanted to run for president. 4 years ago, everybody went ballistic on him, saying that he was going to split the vote up. He would help Trump get in. And he got shouted down so much, he was like, screw this, I'm going to go retire.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him. I mean, I would, you know, you joked once about a write-in with me. That was the last job on God's green earth I would ever want.
Oh, yeah, I agree. If I got it, I'd have to bring all you guys with me, so I wouldn't be there alone.
No, I just would never, never, ever want that job at all. And I think a lot of people that are already financially secure, et cetera, look at that and go, there's absolutely no way I would go. And it's not, I wouldn't even take it if they called me up on January 19th and said, hey, if you could get over to D.C., we'll swear you in. I wouldn't even want to do the job. I sure as hell wouldn't want to go through a campaign.
Well, if the 10-year rates... And I've got them at, it's a huge move. 30 years up to 4.65. 10 years, 4.46. If these things are 6% by next summer, I don't care how many people love Trump. This market's not going to be here, I don't think.
Oh, no, it's not going to be here. And, they've got a VIX that's based on the bond market. It's called the MOVE Index. And that thing has been going out of control. Last night when I was on, everybody was saying that right now the move is at 130, which is like a 13% VIX, but that's still high for fixed income. They don't quote it like they quote VIX on a smooth basis, but it has been working its way higher into the election. I really think that we're going to turn very quickly to worrying about inflation, and you can already see. The Fed funds futures markets about a month ago it was indicating that the Fed funds rate would be around 3.25 by the end of 2025. That's around 3.8 now. It's been working its way up for the election.
I don't know if you know the answer. Is maybe somebody at your I got time for maybe one more question here. When you look at the national debt, okay, and you look at the U.S. budget statement. Somehow or another, the budget statement says we should be down, you know, whatever, $800 billion this year or something.
Yeah.
But the national debt is up way more than that. What's not on the budget statement?
I feel like Social Security might be off of it. There are some entitlements that are separate from the budget, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Hello. All right, we got a dash, Russell. Good stuff.
You betcha, you betcha. Yeah, it sounds like you have to get sleep, busy there, which I'm not surprised at.
SP Futures up 116, NASDAQ up 328. I'll back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.